live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. Got my
mojo working, but... Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us. We're here to talk about ways to empower people all over the world. It's not just a local message, it's a universal message. It's my belief that we should all be living long and happy and productive and conscious lives. So the program each day is divided into segments that contribute to empowerment, but also take on important social issues, trying to provide a different perspective. Today, for example, we're going to address Jane Brody's column yesterday in the New York Times. She is their respected health journalist and has been for a long time on the subject of GMOs. She is very pro-GMO. She doesn't see what all the fuss is about. She doesn't believe it's warranted. So we have one of our scholars in residence, Richard Gale, who is from the genetic engineering background, coming on with a different point of view. Also today, we're going to look at a long-awaited EPA study that says fracking pollutes drinking water. Now think of all the states that all the legislators, backed and supported by special interest groups from the mining industry and the fracking industry, said it does not impact water. It's not going to pollute the streams and aquifers and the air. But they were wrong. 10,000 wells later in Texas and over 20,000 wells later in Oklahoma and Montana and Wyoming, they were wrong. What do we do now? Also today, from Ralph Nader, 10 reasons the Trans-Pacific Partnership is not a progressive trade agreement. Also, we hear about the drone warfare and how everything that could be done to minimize collateral damage is. Really? Well, Tim Martin of DroneWarfare.com has a different perspective. Also today, the government is using secrecy as a weapon, from Washington Blog. And if time permits, Thou Shall Not Kill, from Chris Hedges, from Truthdig. Plus, for those people who are watching the endless parade of comments from Ann Coulter and Ted Cruz and the other members of the Christian right who think that everything that they do is right because it's done in God's name and the sanctity of all of marriage. But we're going to have someone on today that will share a point of view that is a little different. And this is a person who claims to be America's best Christian. Okay, if that's the case, we're interested in hearing what they have to say. So as you see, we have a really full roster, but we always begin with the latest in health and nutrition. And before we start, when I say that ours is a worldwide audience, let me just give you this. This came in yesterday. This is from a Dr. William Shields. He is a member of the Renal Transplant and Vascular Access Surgeon. He's a medical doctor and a specialist in renal and vascular at Royal Free Hospital in London. And he says the following, Dear Gary, my brother is Patrick, and you've seen him in Central Park. And we're working in the United Kingdom as a renal transplant vascular surgeon, but I've been following along with my mother and siblings your work for a long time. I'm a regular listener to your show over the internet and admire the work you've done and continue to do. I remain an enthusiastic proponent of both your medical and political viewpoints. I trained in Ireland for my years and made many fellow nurses and doctors aware of this information that you share. And we've circulated lots of copies of Friendly Fire, your documentary. I admire your energy and charisma and look forward again to getting back to the United States. And he works both in Dublin and London. That's just one of lots of people around the world of all backgrounds who listen and share the information. So the idea is, if you hear something that you feel is a value that is reasonable, that makes sense, please share it with people. And that's how something good is shared. Now, today, I just want to continue just a little bit on what happens if you're not healthy, and you may not realize how unhealthy you are, and you don't realize that, okay, because you've adapted to fatigue, you've adapted to musculoskeletal disorders, and you just kind of bear through a day, you take anti-pain medication. Here are some of the things you should pay attention to. Check your iron in your blood. You may be anemic. Also, check to see if your blood sugar is normal. You may be pre-diabetic or diabetic. Check to see if you have any loss in balance and if you are a problem with anger, because people who get angry and scream, they are far more prone to massive constriction of blood flow in the brain with their anger, and as a result have micro strokes. These are tiny strokes, not massive strokes, but they lay down plaque, amyloid plaque in the brain, and it causes problems. So we have a lot of people who have viruses and are not aware of it, so get a viral panel done. We have people who lack hormones. They don't have enough DHEA or testosterone, free testosterone, or estrogen or progesterone. It is inexpensive and easy to get a hormone panel done, especially after the age of 40. If you did these things, then at least you would have a way of knowing what some of the underlying sources are for your problems. And then if we can help you, be happy to. Now, I also mentioned yesterday one of the ways we can help prevent breast cancer is by having foods high in carotenoids. And that's just not carrots, by the way. That's all of your colorful vegetables and fruits. So just remember, a rainbow of food heals. Yellows, purples, red, oranges, blues. So from grapes to blue grapes and black grapes to blood oranges, the more color in your diet, the healthier you're going to be. Today, I'm going to mention that you can help yourself if you have cancer, especially cervical cancer, by taking cabbage. There's a really good article, I referenced it yesterday, in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer, where UCLA researchers showed that radiation actually makes breast cancer more malignant. And this is the actual peer-reviewed literature. That doesn't mean radiologists are going to stop using it or oncologists are going to stop referring people for it. It's just that we get into these habits and we don't break through the habit to see what is new and relevant. In fact, one of the things they found was that new stem cells are up to 3,000% more likely to form tumors compared to cancer cells that didn't get radiation. So radiation for the breast actually increases by 3,000%, up to 3,000% new stem cells, and hence forms new tumors. So when we say that the orthodox therapy surgery I support, I believe there's a great deal of merit to cancer surgery. But chemotherapy and radiation, no. The philosophy is simple. Kill as many cancer cells as you can before you kill so many healthy cells, you kill the person. In fact, new research from South Dakota State University have found that a compound in cruciferous vegetables, we're talking again, as I mentioned yesterday, broccoli, collard, cabbage, and cauliflower, can target those cancer stem cells. In fact, it can help prevent a reoccurrence and spread of some cancers. And again, let me give you this so you can write it down. The compound, because it's a new compound, it is P-E-I-T-C, P-E-I-T-C, which stands for phenylethyl isothiocyanate. So when the researchers added this cyanate from cruciferous vegetables to a petri dish with human cervical cancer stem cells, 75% of the cells died within 24 hours. Medicine doesn't have anything that can do that. And it was found in cruciferous vegetables alone. It also has strong anti-inflammatory powers. So that's important. That means then that broccoli and cabbage, all your cruciferous vegetables, and I gave you a list, but real quick, I'll do it again. Arugula, bok choy, broccoli, broccoli sprouts, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, collard greens, kale, mustard greens, radishes, rutabaga, and watercress. These are also highly anti-inflammatory. So, if you have any form of pain, like a back pain and intestinal pain, this would be anti-inflammatory and would help you. So you want to take this for any form of pain in the body. And I would also take it, if I had cancer, I would take it with curcumin, and I would also take it with piperine, P-I-P-E-R-I-N-E. That's the compound in black pepper, and it helps prevent breast cancer stem cells from renewing themselves. So that's important. And green tea, generally at 2,000 milligrams divided throughout the day, because the compound called EGCG is in Edward, G as in George, C as in color, G as in George, EGCG, and that is important. But when I take quercetin with that, it actually enhances it. So that means if I'm having a juice and I put onions and apples in there, I'm getting my quercetin. If I throw some green tea powder in there, then I'm getting the EGCGs. If I then throw some curcumin powder in there, well, now I got a powerful, powerful anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory drink. Now, a new study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science shows that connection between age-related cognitive decline, that means the older you get, the less you remember, and you have memory loss, and dopamine levels. And scientists broadly regard cognitive decline as a natural condition of aging. I say they are wrong. There is no condition natural to aging. There are conditions to premature aging, but not normal aging. Like cognitive decline is not a part. And because you can find people around the world who have perfect cognition and they're over 100 years of age. And you have people in their 40s who lack cognition. That's the lifestyle. That's stress. That's pollution. That's lack of nutrients. But research has not yet established the mechanisms for age-related differences in brain function between younger and older people. Let me explain it in lay language. Because among the changes that occur with normal aging, you'll have a decline in dopamine. But normal is average. So, how can I put this? The fact that 90% of the population believes something doesn't mean it's true. And we've been living as a democracy for a long time, and I feel that should be examined. Why? We were never meant to be a democracy. We were meant to be a republic. What's the difference? Well, broadly speaking, a republic acknowledges the uniqueness of the individual. So if you have a truth, you are not automatically dismissed in a republic because you have an idea that may be different than others. In a democracy, it's the majority rule. So if the majority of people believe something, then they win. Everyone who has a different opinion is not considered. And then whoever controls those democratic processes, the media, deforms opinions, people for hire who convince you the rightness of their decisions, they then get the majority of people to believe that, well, we have one vote and one person, which is not true, and that we have informed consent, we do not. We have freedom of choice, we do not. Everything is tailored. You're free to go up a road, providing that you don't take any detours and you don't, you know, make your own road in the forest. So, you know, they'll say, go up this road. And you go and you say, I'm free to go up this road, but is it your road? Should you be on that road? What if you have a difference of opinion? Well, that's where you start to see it's more than a subtle distinction in the difference between a republic and a democracy. So, too, when it comes to saying, well, young person or old person, there's an enormous difference. Is there? In the brain? Show me the difference. I'll show you some older people with young brains, and I'll show you how to take an older brain and rejuvenate it. So we're not looking at what makes us uniquely different and how we can de-age, how we can change systems. That said, studies demonstrated that neurons in mice with healthy dopamine system exhibit classic bursting activity and that mice induced with dopamine deficiency displayed a complete lack of neuron bursting activity. And in the dopamine deficient mice, the researchers successfully increased bursting activity by administering a dopamine element. And so what does this mean? It means that we should be de-aging the brain by taking into the brain what will help maintain a healthy dopamine level, just like a healthy serotonin level. If we exercise, that does it. If we take in living foods, that does it. If we take in fresh organic juices and don't take in all the toxins from plastic items, water bottles and left in a car, for example, leach out the chemicals, the biphenyl chemicals that are in the plastic, all the perfumes, all the detergents that are used in our laundry with all the chemicals. We should be using free and clear detergents that do not have any synthetic and allergenic or, let's say, any chemical disrupting, especially our hormone chemicals. So we can do it. We can de-age the brain, have normal brain activity, and be, in effect, an 80-year-old with a 20-year-old brain. That is doable. So that's something we can look forward to. And finally, this is from Queen Mary University in the United Kingdom. A good study that shows that massage-like stroking has a positive effect on the immune system. The researchers had found the action lowers the stress hormone noradrenaline, resulting in an increased T-cell development, which plays an important role in immunity. The findings could help humans recover from immunosuppressive therapies where the immune system's ability to fight disease is compromised, such as adults receiving chemotherapy or children with age-defining illnesses. So I think that's very important. Now, think of what your dog or cat loves. They love to be massaged. Think of getting a reflexology where you have your foot massaged. Think of getting a head massage. Think of getting a full body massage, especially one that's light. So it's the stroking. What do we do with a child? What does a mother do? A father, sometimes more often than a mother, rocking back and forth, singing, stroking the hair and the fingers and the toes. Yeah. And by the way, it works the same on primates too. A primate baby and a human baby are so similar in their eye contact and their movements. And so massage-like stroking can enhance the immune system. So for anyone who wants to have a better immune system, hopefully your partner or family member or someone can do this. And by the way, in traditional Japanese culture, when the person is taking a nightly bath, they sit on a stool in this, looks like different designs for it. So it could be a circular barrel-like construction, but it's a tub, and warm water is poured over them, ideally with essential oils. And then it's very ritualistic. It's massaging the hair and the scalp and the back. And this is a long, thousands-of-year-old tradition, and it helps ease the stress of the day. So that's important. I'll just add one last little one in here. Because we're just in peach season right now, we've had a delay because of all the rain in the East Coast and Georgia, where so many great peaches come from, and also in Washington State. But this is from Washington State University, and it was published in the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry as well as the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. It showed that peaches make cancer cells commit suicide. Quote, three peaches a day keep breast cancer away. In fact, it induces metastatic breast cancers to death. How about that? It drives the cell signaling to drive them to commit suicide. So when we know that this could be a chemo-preventative food therapy. So to test the effects of peaches on breast cancer, mice were injected first with breast cancer cells and fed various doses of peach extract. And the high polyphenol chemicals from the peaches slowed the growing tumors in the mice. And that's how they came up with these results. So it's just an anti-cancer food, and it's a good one. But no one knew that peaches were an anti-cancer food. We knew that the other ones were, but not the peaches. So how about that? So if you took three peaches and you juice them, you're getting the benefit. And yet it's easy to take the juice. You're going to get about 4 ounces of juice. That's a small amount from three peaches. Or you could throw those three peaches in a blender. That would also be good as well. So that's the latest on Health and Healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a brief break and come back. Please stay with us.
Say it's all right.
It's all right.
Say it's all right.
It's all right.
It's all right. Have a good time, 'cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
We're gonna move it slow.
When lights are low, when you move it slow, it sounds like a moan, and it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
Now listen to the beat.
Kind of pat your feet.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll.
You got soul, and everybody.
Nice to have you with us. What we're going to do now is we're going to play a 10-minute clip from a program where five MD PhDs were discussing the possible toxic effects of genetically engineered material. It isn't a fair discussion because clearly the people have not done their homework, and also the woman you hear is a PhD, and she's on a lot longer than Jeffrey Smith. And here are her arguments in support of why GMOs are safe and how, as a PhD and as a mother, that she would not risk her child, you know, if it was dangerous. Well, we had an awful lot of people working for the tobacco companies, working for the DDT manufacturing companies, who had children and said that it was safe. They were wrong. I'll let you listen to this, then I'm going to come back and I'll share my research, if I were allowed to be on there, for what I would have to say on the dangers of GMOs. Please listen in.
We're showing you how to remove toxins from your home, but can we be sure the air we breathe or the food we eat is safe?
The most popular weed killer in the world may cause cancer. That is the determination by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Studies of the chemical glyphosate, the active ingredient in the Monsanto product Roundup, have shown that it causes damage to chromosomes and DNA in human cells and also increases the risk of cancerous tumors in mammals. After review of the studies, they officially classified glyphosate as probably carcinogenic to humans.
And so obviously anyone who read this headline, you know, it raises eyebrows. And we did invite Dr. Donna Farmer, a toxicologist with the Product Safety Center at Monsanto Company, to join us and talk about your perspective. Because anytime you hear the word cancer associated with food, rightly so, it raises concerns.
Yeah, absolutely. I can understand why there are concerns. And thank you for having me here today. Because, like with you guys, I've seen those headlines, and I know people have a lot of questions. I can tell by your audience how they felt about it. And I'm here as a scientist, and I'm also a mom. And I'm here to answer some questions as well as address some of the confusion with the IARC report. Because when you look at what they came to in conclusion compared to regulatory agencies, third-party experts and authoritative scientific bodies around the world, for all the 40 years this product has been in use, this is a completely different departure. And so even recently in January, the German regulatory authorities, on the behalf of the European Union, completed a multi-year, very comprehensive review of glyphosate, and they concluded there was no carcinogenic risk to humans and that it didn't cause damage to DNA.
So you're a scientist, basically. Mm-hmm. So you're studying this, and you feel 100% comfortable. You even said you have kids, so you're a family person.
Yes.
You would feel very comfortable knowing that pretty much every day of your children's life, they're being exposed to this.
Yes. You know, I'm a scientist at Monsanto for 20 years, mm-hmm. and this has been the molecule that I've studied all of those years, and I'm absolutely confident of the data behind it. And again, you're probably all saying, yeah, well, she's with Monsanto. But again, don't take my word for it, because the regulatory agencies around the world for the past 40 years, looking at very comprehensive reviews, have come to that conclusion. That's why it was so strikingly different.
Well, so
that
the one thing, we do have someone from sort of the alternative perspective. But the one thing I did want to ask is that it's not like IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, is some biased organization. And just to be fair, they're basically saying that glyphosate probably could cause cancer in humans, but not that it probably does. So even acknowledging that, to me, you know, obviously anytime you have an international agency and it's made up of so-called experts and they don't have any quote-unquote skin in the game, that raises alarms to me, as not just as a doctor, but as a consumer, because it's not like they have some agenda.
The Dutch parliament voted to ban it, basically, throughout the whole country. Well, what I'm wondering is, in our country, what's different about the data in the Dutch parliament than
I'm telling you, it's very controversial because it's country to country. Because, you know, there are countries like Germany said, okay, well, it's safe. And then other countries saying, well, it's not safe. To me, there's so much confusion.
90% of our crops are being sprayed with Roundup. I really want to know. Yeah, I really want to know.
And so, Donna, really quickly before I bring in our next guest, I guess the question from an objective perspective is why does IARC give this or make this conclusion at all?
Well, IARC
if there's absolutely no risk.
IARC is not the WHO. IARC is a program under the WHO, and there are three other programs under the WHO that have concluded glyphosate is not carcinogenic or genotoxic. IARC has a very different process. They've been around 40 years, and I think it'd be interesting to all your consumers to know that IARC does classifications of all other kinds of substances, like pickled vegetables, aloe vera extract, coffee, your cell phone use, and now glyphosate. And they even classify things as professions such as barbers and frying cooks. And so they just have a very different way they look at it. So I'll give you an example of one of the studies. They actually injected the Roundup formulation into the abdomen of the animals, and they did have an effect. But that's not a relevant route of exposure for somebody who's going to be spraying that herbicide. So that's what we look at and the regulatory agencies look at, and like the other bodies in the World Health Organization. IARC only looks and says, oh, if I inject it, there's a hazard. So there's different ways that we look at the data, and if we had any indication or any concerns about the safety of this product, we wouldn't be putting it out there.
I've spent a lot of time reading about this recently. IARC, again, when they classify something as a probable carcinogen, they're not saying that it does cause cancer necessarily. But it's interesting when I was reading through, because there are a lot of things that we do in our lives that increase cancer risk. Our goal right now is to figure out cost, benefit, the truth. We also have joining us the founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology and author of Seeds of Deception, Jeffrey Smith. And he's from Santa Fe, New Mexico right now. And you do believe that this chemical is carcinogenic. And tell us why you have that perspective.
Well, we exposed for many years the company Monsanto that's making these claims. On two different continents, they were convicted of lying about the toxicity or the ability to degrade in the soil of glyphosate, convicted by a New York court and a French court. Many scientists who reviewed their research have declared it tobacco science, catching them red-handed, specifically designing their studies to avoid finding problems. They've also been convicted of quietly poisoning the people of Anniston, Alabama with their PCB factory, knowing that the people were getting hurt, and they were fined $700 million. Let me speak also about the nature of glyphosate. Glyphosate was originally created to clean industrial boilers and pipes because it grabbed metals and minerals and pulled them out. When it was spilled on the ground and they showed that it killed plants, Monsanto came along and patented it as an herbicide. It was released this week that the levels of Roundup that's considered safe in drinking water causes endocrine disruption in human cells as well as toxicity. Also this week, another published study showed that it can invoke antibiotic resistance in pathogenic bacteria. It also blocks the ability of the gut bacteria to produce aromatic amino acids. And as you know, that can produce serotonin and and melatonin and dopamine, absolutely essential. It can also block the production of what's called CYP enzymes, and they're used in the liver to detox. So if they're not functioning correctly, all of the other toxins in the environment can be more dangerous.
Jeffrey, that list sounds horrific, and I would opt for exactly none of those things, obviously. But I want to run something by you that I read when I researched this, that it's estimated that it would take almost 10 years and over $250 million to develop as an industry a new active ingredient for a safe or even just a new effective pesticide. So my question to you is, what is the solution? Because we need to eat, and I would rather not spend $100 for a bunch of bananas because there's only going to be 10 bunches of them on the planet if we don't have a way to grow them effectively. So what would be the safer answer?
The biotech industry and the chemical industry want you to compare one chemical to another. But if you look at organic agriculture grown without these agrochemicals, it turns out they have at least the same level of yield as the conventional agriculture. And in developing countries, it can increase yield by 100%. And these are very, very major studies. We don't need these chemicals. Prior to World War II, we didn't use them.
Jeffrey, really quickly, just because I want to give the floor back to Donna, the things that Jeffrey said are scary.
You know, that's his perspective as an author. As a scientist, that is my job, to look at all those allegations that he brings up all the time. And we look at those every single day. And the regulatory agencies look at those as well. And when we look at glyphosate and we look at how it's used, regulatory authorities have all approved that all labeled uses of glyphosate are safe for humans.
And so we've talked often on the show about how in an ideal world, we would all buy organic and eat organic foods. But we have a lot of people who rely on I come from a family of farmers, and they use herbicides, and they have to stay afloat. I mean, there are so many chemicals in the world now that we have to be aware of, and you always have to balance the benefit versus the harm. And, you know, at the end of the day, if everyone had their own garden and could plant things organically, you know, that would be the ideal.
An ideal world, right?
And I, you know, my hope, and I'll be quite frank, is my hope is that there are more studies done. There are more studies to figure out. You know, obviously, Donna, you feel very strongly, you know, that glyphosate is not carcinogenic, that you feel very safe, you know, but you have to understand why there are people who are dubious, like Jeffrey, and many people in our audience, because there is, it would make sense to the casual observer that
there is evidence to support that theory.
Definitely.
You know what? I agree. And I understand why everybody is concerned, and there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of misinformation on the internet. But I will tell you, and I mean this very honestly, I am extremely highly confident in this product as a mom, and then I can back it up as a scientist.
I think that what we've all learned today is ask questions. Yeah. Certainly know what you're eating. Know the research. My big thing is always, you know, just read. Read the studies. If you're truly interested, read, educate yourself. Form your own opinion. Figure out for yourself what you think the truth is. I'd like to thank Jeffrey and Donna both for being with us.
That was a segment of the doctors. Now, if you were the average person watching that, Jeffrey was given the shortest part of that to respond. And the doctor on there, I'm sure she's highly paid because Monsanto's famous for being extremely benevolent to its employees. And when you work at a company like Monsanto for 20 years, whether you had one child or multiple children, you have to look at all the people who work for bankers, who work for other DuPont and Syngenta and Bayer and other companies making pesticides. It doesn't mean they're a bad mom. It doesn't mean that they're being safe for the mom. Think of all the medical doctors that have vaccinated their own children, fully believing in the vaccine safety and efficacy. Turns out it's not true. But what he said challenges us. He said, do your homework. We need more studies. No, we don't. We actually don't. Here's what he should have done before he did this segment of the program. He should have done his homework. Here are the studies that he could have cited. Sherbrooke University in Quebec, published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Reproductive Toxicology. It was the first of its kind that showed that the BT protein from Monsanto, called CRY1AB, used in GMO engineering resistance to glyphosate, was found in maternal and fetal blood. In April, they found that glyphosate was present in breast milk and many infant formulas. Also, glyphosate may cause autism in 50% of children in the next 10 years. That's research conducted by Dr. Stephanie Seneff of MIT, and she noted the similarity between symptoms of glyphosate toxicity and those of autism. Very similar biomarkers, such as zinc and iron deficiency and low serum sulfate and mitochondrial disorders. Also, research done by Dr. Don Huber of Purdue University, who has worked with glyphosate for over 20 years and is a strong opponent against it, found that it enhances pathogenic fungi growth, which would contribute to many GI complications. Now, those are just a few. And also keep in mind that because we don't do human experiments, we'll look at someone after they've consumed something and see is there something it might have done, but we don't take 1,000 people and give them glyphosate and 1,000 people and not, that would not be humane. But here are things that we do know based upon the actual science, all published in peer-reviewed literature. We have a Dr. Arpad Pataski, a renowned biochemist and plant geneticist from the famous Rellet Institute in Scotland, noted that rats fed GMO potatoes developed precancerous cells in the GI tract, had atrophied livers, enlarged pancreases, recessed and regressed brain patterns, liver and testicle development was maladaptive, and damage to the immune system. By the way, he's a major scientist, and he opposes all bioengineering crops and plants and argues that this damage is not caused by the insecticide, but rather the genetic engineering process itself. We have Dr. Hossein Kaoud of Cairo University in Egypt. He confirmed Dr. Pasadi's research with feeding GMO soy, corn, wheat, and canola to rats in a study published in the Journal of Neurotoxicology. The rats in the Egyptian study displayed, quote, shrinkage of kidneys, change in the liver and spleen, appearance of malignant parts in the tissue, kidney failure, and hemorrhages in the intestine, end quote. And the findings also included a loss in the rats, quote, learning and memory abilities. In 2012, there was a study by Dr. Eric Giles Seralini at the University in France using the same trial protocol used by Monsanto, their same identical protocol, for its FDA approval of GMO Roundup Ready corn. Dr. Seralini's group used rats that exhibited severe organ damage, most notably to the liver and kidneys, and yet the shocking discovery was the enormous tumors, especially to the mammary gland, the rats developed after a steady diet of GM corn. 50% of the males and 70% of the females died prematurely. The fundamental difference between the Seralini and Monsanto study was that Seralini's trial continued for the rat's entire lifespan, up to 2 years, instead of only 3 months, as in the Monsanto study. The length of the trial is especially significant because Seralini and his team did not observe GMO corn's serious adverse effects until the 4th month. So that got me thinking, okay, is it possible, could be, a coincidence that virtually all of the GMO studies done by makers of GMO products only last 3 months? Well, well, what a coincidence. But all the adverse effects start at month 4 and go on. So what if all these companies had let their studies run for the full life of the rat? We would not have any GMO products on the market today. And also, there was a massive campaign by the pro-GMO companies to destroy Seralini's reputation and get his article retracted from a major peer-reviewed journal. It was, but it was republished. And no other scientific study regarding GMO safety has undergone more scientific review and scrutiny than his study, and because it really, it has enormous implications for damaging GMO health safety. In an earlier study published by Dr. Seralini, his team discovered that Monsanto's Roundup pesticide will damage or kill testicular cells in rats between 1 to 48 hours after exposure. And Roundup is one of the most popular pesticides used today in America's industrial agricultural industry and the chemical that most contaminates fresh produce. In fact, you walk into any store, any farmer's market, except those are organic, and the likelihood is that Roundup was used on those that produce. An even more frightening analysis of GMO hazards was published by Dr. Jack Heineman, director of the New Zealand Institute for Gene Ecology. And while investigating the Australian government's GM wheat, the Australian wheat was engineered to silence certain wheat genes of microRNA. And Heineman discovered these silent genes match human genes, and consumption of the GMO wheat could halt an invaluable enzyme that would cause death. Children born without this enzyme usually die within 5 years. According to Dr. Heineman, three things are important. One, the plant microRNA have been detected in human blood, meaning that they survive the human digestive tract. Two, microRNAs survive cooking and processing of food. And three, laboratory research confirmed that this wheat microDNA silenced the human gene in cultured cells. Then in 2011, a Canadian team from the University of Sherbrooke detected the presence of the insecticide protein in blood of women. And a Dr. Alexei Servov of Russia's National Association of Gene Security tested fast-reproducing Campbell hamsters fed on GMO soy over a period of 2 years. By the third generation of mating hamster pairs, the offspring were infertile and hair was growing from their mouths. Corn and canola has been bioengineered to produce sterile pollen that manufactures a toxin called barnase, B-A-R-N-A-S-E. Barnase is toxic to human cells and has been shown to cause kidney damage in rat. In Monsanto's own studies, Roundup Ready canola, they found rat livers became heavier from the GMO canola diet. York University in the United Kingdom wanted to determine why there was such a sharp escalation in soy allergies, 10 to 15% in a single year. Their findings show that the increase directly corresponded to the United Kingdom's introduction of genetically modified soy into the British food supply. The Neurophysiology Division of the Russian Academy of Sciences discovered that most rat offspring fed Monsanto's Roundup Ready soy died within 3 weeks. Also, the third generation of male rats showed a huge increase in reproductive sterility. The company Calgene had to reveal that their own studies for their GM Flavor Saver tomato caused bleeding stomachs in rats during trials. Now, one of the important conclusions from the French study by Seralini is that it challenges the propaganda by scientists in the GM industry that argues that millions of people have eaten GM food and they're fine. This is just corporate gossip, since in every country where GMO have become a regular ingredient of food source in a country, we are witnessing epidemic rises in diabetes, allergies, asthma, GI illnesses, reproductive problems, and weakened immune systems. So there was also on Roundup, King's College molecular geneticist, Dr. Michael Antoniou, a molecular biologist, also Dr. John Fagan, outlined the health risks now shown with glyphosate based from just peer-reviewed studies. Here's the peer-reviewed literature. It damages your DNA, premature births and miscarriages, birth defects including neurotube defects and the absence of large parts of the brain and skull, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, disruption of neurobehavioral development in children, including attention deficit disorder, autism, diabetes, infertility, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's disease. In the peer-reviewed journal Entropy, a researcher at MIT and a member of the Union of Concerned Scientists have discovered that glyphosate is in fact taken up by plants from the soil and food in our and found in our food, an accusation Monsanto continues to deny. The study says that the negative impact of glyphosate accumulation, quote, is insidious and manifests slowly over time as inflammation damages cellular systems throughout the body, end quote. And another MIT study reported in 2013 a connection between residues of Roundup in our produce and the rising number of adults acquiring Parkinson's disease, and that was published in Parkinsonian Related Disorder Journal. Another study in the Journal of Chemical Toxicology reports that Roundup was based pesticides had teratogenic effects in mammals that impaired their acid signaling. This is a molecular signaling necessary for the development of the acid in the body. And there are multiple peer-reviewed studies conducted by researcher Dr. Andrea Carrasco of the University of Buenos Aires, where glyphosate was observed to cause teratogenic impairment of neural signaling and microcephaly, leading to craniofacial malformations. And just after seven months ago, another MIT study, where a lot of independent research is being conducted on glyphosate impact on human health and the environment, drew an association between pesticide and the rise of autism. And another 2012 study from Leipzig University noted that Monsanto's Roundup herbicide negatively impacted the natural GI bacteria in poultry. And what was most frightening was that the highly pathogenic bacteria resisted the Roundup while the beneficial bacteria were susceptible to it. And this finding may account for the increase in foodborne pathogens and contaminated meats in the marketplace. And a very critical study published last October by the National Agricultural Statistics Services, which is an independent organization, honeybees and other pollinators are being harmed by glyphosate and their effect on appetite behavior. So here we have a professor emeritus of agricultural science at Purdue University, Dr. Don Huber, and says that Roundup infects plants in a manner similar to an AIDS-like syndrome, which destroys the plant's immunity and hinders mineral and vitamin absorption. Poor. Now, that's not all. Then we have to also take a moment and take a look at the company. There was no mention of the company, its reputation. Let me give you a little background on what many consider the most evil corporation in the world. It was founded back in 1901, and it began manufacturing its first product, an artificial sweetener, saccharin, which it sold to the Coca-Cola Company in 1902. And in 1917, the government sues Monsanto over the safety of Monsanto's original product, saccharin, and though it was added to a lot more products at that time. 1926, it founded and incorporated the town of Monsanto, later renamed Saugat, Illinois. And for years, the Monsanto plant there was the nation's largest producer of polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs. And even though they were banned in the 1970s, they remain in the water along Dead Creek. And then it goes into the plastic business in 1938, a year after DuPont helped ban hemp, because DuPont knew that hemp was superior to their new nylon product made from Rockefeller oil. And then they conducted research from 1939 to 45. Monsanto did the research on uranium for the Manhattan Project. And then they began in 1944 manufacturing DDT. And it was banned in 1972 because of Rachel Carson. And they started in 1955 producing petroleum-based fertilizers. And then in 1961 to 71, they manufactured Agent Orange, a mixture of 2,4-5-T and 2,4-D, very high concentration dioxin, and many people were poisoned by it. Vietnam veterans were poisoned. It's estimated that Agent Orange contaminated more than 3 million civilians and servicemen, and according to one estimate, 4.8 million Vietnamese people were exposed to Agent Orange. 400,000 died, 500,000 children born with defects, and then Monsanto discovered 65 aspartame. And then at 67, it enters to a joint venture with IG Farben. Remember, that was the Nazi-funded organization. And then there was a doctor, Harold Weissman, a biochemist at the University of Wisconsin, conducted aspartame safety tests on infant monkeys on behalf of the cereal company. And of the seven monkeys that were being fed aspartame mixed with milk, one monkey died. Five other monkeys had grand mal seizures. And then 1969, an internal policy memo described psychological tactics Monsanto should use to bring the FDA into a subconscious spirit of participation. And then it goes on from there. I don't have enough time to go through everything, but just they have been sued many, many times. They've had to settle. Monsanto found guilty of negligently exposing workers to benzene at its chocolate bayou plant in Texas, forced to pay $100 million. A congressional hearing, medical specialists denounce a National Cancer Institute study dispute that formaldehyde causes cancer, and Monsanto had the people there saying it's not harmful. Oh, yeah. formaldehyde harmful. And federal jury awarded $700 million to one community because of how Monsanto, knowing it was $600 million, they were fined in 2003, to 20,000 residents of Anniston, Alabama. They severely contaminated the water with PCBs they had been dumping there since 1930s. They knew what they were doing. So when you look at a company, you should look at the totality of the company, and then you start to see, why wasn't any of its reputation brought up? What damage it's done in the past with its products in the past? How many GIs, how many Vietnamese, how many children have been developed neurological or physiological disease or cancer because of its products? None of this was brought out. And as far as the scientists, I just gave you the tip of the iceberg of the science. So he says we need more science. We don't need more science. We need better educated hosts of shows who do some homework before they show that they're misinformed when they do a program. Let us now go to our resident scholar on this issue. He has a background in genetics, Richard Gale. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Richard. Talk about Jane Brody's column in the New York Times and your response to it.
Many people may have, or some people may have known that Jane Brody, one of the New York Times, big health editors, had written an article very pro GMOs that was published yesterday, I believe. So, and it's this is a very typical. We've seen this repeatedly from the New York Times. It's a very stereotypical scientific kind of denialism that we've come to see so frequently with climate change denialism. It regurgitates Monsanto's and DuPont's, typical talking points, just with their own journalistic spin. And she has been a leading supporter of the pharmaceutical and big ag industries for most of her career. I mean, we might remember even just with concerning the vaccine issue, she wrote positive reviews for both for Paul Offit's book that he did, Autism's False Promise, which was his rant against anybody who opposed vaccines or claimed there was a vaccine autism connection. She wrote a positive review on his later book, that was his attack on the supplement industry and nutrients. She has also been those are the two main big ones, I think, that we could just state was is her pro-vaccine or her anti-supplemental stand. I think one of the real very difficult things for people to understand sometimes is how people can abide, hold on to some of these very detrimental views regarding science or corporate science in the face of so much evidence, as you pointed out in that long litany of different studies. And one of the things we need to remember with concerning Monsanto and DuPont, their incentive is not to produce anything for the betterment of society. This is revenue generation. And you go back to the very first genetic engineered studies that were ever done for plants. And that was Monsanto's funding University of California, Berkeley's, right around the time, in the very early stages of the Genome Project. Funding its genetic research facility in Emeryville, California. What they were doing after that was that, and this is well known, it's in all the literature, this is when they covertly infiltrated Mexico's corn crop to plant GMOs against Mexico's ban. I mean, this was, and it turned into a very large international lawsuit of Mexico filing suit against Monsanto. So even from the very beginning of genetic engineering, Monsanto's genetic engineering projects, they've been involved in misdemeanor and misbehavior and criminal acts to try to promote their products. There's just so many different areas you can kind of go in with Jane Brody's. I think, is just so many of the points that she raised concerning you had brought up already, and Jeffrey Smith did, just showing that, you know, there's no evidence to show that GMOs improve yields and to feed the world in any way, shape, or form compared to traditional organic methods of agriculture. I think one of the things I would like to kind of share, though, and I think this was very, it's not known to many people, and that is that we are very concerned with climate change today, and we look at agriculture as contributing to it, because industrial agriculture is very fossil fuel intensive. And something that was discovered, this is a more recent study, and that was the BT, this gene that is inserted into the crops, all right, the pesticide, when, you know, we always turn over crops into the soil, right? And that's, those crops get broken down. It adds to the nutrients in the soil for your next season's crops. But that breakdown requires bacteria to do the breakdown. Nutritional agriculture requires a very rich flora in order to provide nutrients to the plants. And what they discovered was that this BT gene, which is the pesticide gene that is inside the plant itself, okay, has the ability to limit the production of carbon dioxide from the soil. And this is just such a crit, because it is altering the flora of the soil itself. And this is where, I mean, it actually showed in this context, because we speak about the possibility of agriculture actually reducing carbon sequestration and whatnot. It's actually contributing to it, the GMO crops. So I thought that was a very, very interesting study that came out, because I think one of the attacks we can really have from the anti-GMO perspective is if we really show how GMOs and industrial agriculture is greater contributing to climate change and global warming. And that's a very strong point, because then we are aligned with that large body of science in the climate change community. And, of course, Brody doesn't should bring this up at all. In fact, she doesn't even bring up glyphosate in her article. And you pointed out all the different problems in science regarding glyphosate. The other thing that's important is, you know, this misinformation she has provided, she's been stating concerning the federal regulators, and, you know, that all this stuff is thoroughly tested. You know, GMOs were never properly went through conventional channels, federal channels for their approval. When Michael Taylor was at the Monsanto with the Bill Clinton administration, they knew that they couldn't get the first GMOs approved through the FDA, so they went through the federal trade circuits in order to have that reach approval, and that's where we get this kind of crazy notion of substantial equivalence, of no differentiation between a genetically engineered crop from its natural counterpart, and which is what Brody is suggesting, you know, throughout her statement.
We're out of time, but I do want to mention this. What was not discussed is the fact that over 40 different federal employees, including Michael Taylor, head of safety at the FDA, Tom Vilsack, the governor who was the most pro-GMO governor in American history, these are all people who are beholden to Monsanto in policymaking positions. We already know that the FDA panels on safety are heavily loaded with pro-industry groups, not the American consumer, not independent scientists. And just today, Monsanto was ordered to pay $93 million for poisoning residents with Agent Orange, what I just mentioned. Quote, earlier this month, the state Supreme Court of West Virginia dealt a huge blow to the biotech company Monsanto, ordering it to pay $93 million to a small town of Nitro, West Virginia, for poisoning local citizens with Agent Orange chemicals. So, and then also for the idea that, well, we don't want to pay $100 for bananas, just shows you total ignorance. This is from Julie Wilson, quote, organic farming thrives in India as growers revert back to traditional methods. Thousands of farmers throughout India are reverting back to traditional farming methods as the consequences of Western agriculture have begun to negatively impact the region's food and water supply and the health of their people. For more than 40 years after the Green Revolution, a period in which India's agriculture yields skyrocketed following the introduction of commercial farming techniques, growers are returning to traditional organic methods that date back to centuries and more. And by the way, over 280,000 Indian farmers committed suicide after trusting in the genetically engineered cotton, and now they're reverting back. So on every level, these people were wrong on their arguments. Richard Gehl, thank you for joining us.
Thanks,
we're out of time. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.